Action and welcome everybody. Welcome everybody. This is BMP Weekly episode 95. That started really well. It is 7th of September. It is 7th of September, and our highly scripted podcast video blog show is about to start. This time, so my name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a program manager in the OneDrive SharePoint engineering side, running also the Microsoft 365 community activities, and with me as a co-host in the BMP Weekly is Waldek. Who are you? Quick intro.
Hi, everybody. My name is Waldek. Head of product at Rancor. I am trying to do my best to co-run this show with Vesa.
and today
we have a guest from Poland. No one else than Tomasz Poszytek. Welcome, Tomasz.
Hi, hello.
Finally, someone to spell out your name or say your name the right
way. That's what I was actually.
Actually, yes, that's the first time, the first podcast, screencast, whatever, that someone else spells my name correctly.
Can you say it one more time, just out of curiosity?
Tomasz Poszytek.
Okay.
That was perfect. I mean, it was even better than my recording on LinkedIn.
I was born in Poland, I speak Polish. Well, actually, this is a funny thing. So a while back, I moved to Holland, right? And a few years back, I went on the holiday with my in-laws, who are Dutch. And we were in Krakow. So at one day, we went to a shop to buy, I don't know, something for barbecue or some meat. And among ourselves, we would talk in Dutch. Then it was our turn. So I ordered, basically, I told the lady behind the counter, like, well, like what I wanted. And she complimented me on my Polish. I was like, my mother tongue. I mean, I can imagine you find it cool that I speak in Dutch, but it's my mother tongue. I'm supposed to know it.
That's fun.
But in general, now we're laughing for the stereotypes of Polish. But the Polish names are pretty actually difficult, right? Because I used to work with a few people, and even the first name was like impossible to pronounce it. Basically, seeing what it is and then trying to figure out how to pronounce it. So, not. But
if you say so,
cultural
difference. I don't know. I would know better.
I don't find them difficult usually.
Yeah.
You know your way around it. Right, but I mean, if you see something like the RZ and you were trying to like, no, just
Okay, so let's concentrate on something else than Polish names and pronunciation. That's all good. Tomasz, who are you and what are you actually doing for a living? Just going to do a quick intro.
Right. So I'll try to speak slower than you two because I can hardly understand you.
We are too.
Note to self.
Well, I'm from Warsaw, Poland. I'm the Business Applications MVP. And what I do for a living, I'm just a consultant. I have my own small company and we are delivering solutions, business processes, business applications to our customers.
Well, but I mean, you are way more than that, because on your side, you say that you're also a Nintex virtual technology evangelist. Do I get it right?
Yes, as well.
There you go. So you are that. You are an MVP. You know Nintex. You've been doing SharePoint 2007. And from a trusted source, we even know that you've been doing PHP.
Yes. I originated from the PHP. I used to be a developer very, very study years. But then I switched over to project management. And after that, once I was fed up, I switched into being consultant. And speaking about an index, so yes, like the business processes area is something that I've been doing for a long time. I've been doing the SharePoint designing processes as well. And Nintex was just something natural that I started with. With a success.
So moving kind of from a SharePoint 2010 workflows gradually then to Nintex, and now then more on the power the flow side of the house, or power automate side of the house. Yeah. So and that's kind of the power automate is really your specialty nowadays. Is that where you spend most of your time?
Yep, definitely. I mean, more the power automate over power apps and RPA as well. I mean, so the Power Automate plus RPA, this is something that I'm doing for the most of the time or the daytime.
Yeah. And now you need to explain what is an RPA.
So RPA stands for Robotic Process Automation. So this is just like you put a robot instead of a human agent in front of the computer. Human agent grabs a popcorn or drinks a coffee and just watches how the robot is doing their job.
I need that.
Yeah.
And once the bot is working, it even simulates that you're active on Teams, so you can always act as if you're
working. I need that. Working.
That's actually really interesting. So is that's what you're spending most of your projects, or what kind of customer projects you're then building?
Well, they're just mainly around HR or finance processes. Right now, I'm just involved in RPA processes where we need to transform, for example, vendor master data from something that was just on a SharePoint and then was put annually into SAP, and customer credit limits into something that is built on top of an index and with Power Automate and Win Automation to save data to SAP.
Cool. So transforming, kind of migration.
It is still the digitalization or making the processes to flow better.
Yeah.
So I think I'm interested with is that, so you do both Nintex and flows, right? In a way.
Yes. So depending
when
on
when would you do which one?
It is mainly related to customer expectations and needs, because sometimes those processes are really very focused on SharePoint and just SharePoint. And usually it happens that when customer has already their Nintex licenses because they are moving from on-premises, for example, to online, they just want to stay with Nintex because they all have those processes. They need to be migrated and it's just, well, cheaper. And then it's just a natural way because the staff is already skilled in doing Nintex processes. So it usually stays with Nintex later on. And then Power Automate basically appears at customers who are just moving into Office 365 and are looking for a platform to digitalize their processes, and there is Power Automate. And then in the end, it's all about the money. So when we have this discussion, what should we do to make it maybe cheaper? And then there is always this discussion, which technology to choose, because for particular use cases, one is more expensive than the other one, and the other way around as well. So,
yes. Yeah. So as an external consultant, you actually take those licensing discussions into account, right? Because let me clarify why I'm saying that, because I used to be 8 years a consultant in Microsoft Consulting Services, and we had a super simple rule. Whenever somebody asks about licenses, walk away, don't comment, know nothing, because it's such a complex thing to actually talk about the licenses.
Well, but I mean, it's even the same thing for externals, right? Because there are Microsoft licenses basically almost require you to have a PhD in that. There are so many different things. Back in the days, if you wanted to build, I don't know, a portal and that would work with externals, well, you need to have the license for SharePoint, Windows, SQL, and whatnot.
Internet-facing extra thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then combine that and add to the mix externals, and some of them you might have through your enterprise agreement, but then maybe you don't.
So, I mean, as long as you're just focusing on SharePoint, for example, it was maybe easy. But then when you wanted to say how many SQL licenses you need, per core, per whatever, it was
And that's really the hard thing, for sure. Is it getting easier or is it getting more complicated nowadays with a cloud-based licensing model? Because the on-premises isn't anymore a factor.
Honestly, it is getting easier. I mean, there are just two licenses per each product, and it's quite easy to explain which one to use when. However, when you want to move products,
there are only two types. However,
agents with Power Automate, then how much should you pay? It's getting easier. There is a comprehensive guide, but still, for someone who is a first timer trying this Office 5 licensing, it can be confusing still.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, as I said, as long as you're just staying with the one product, it's fairly easy. You have just two licenses to choose from. But then if you want to mix those products together, then you can't get confused which license to choose, which license cover what products additionally, and so on and so on.
Yeah. Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, we've been, I think everybody, many of the people who are listening this and watching this, they know that we've been switching the licenses every now and then in certain areas quite significantly, so which isn't actually a good thing either, because then that confuses the people even more. So, but I think we are now settled. Is the all of the licensing discussions, is it more getting clarified now with the current setup? Everybody is kind of learning the model with the M365 and the add-ons and all of that. What's your take on that?
Yes, it is. That's true. And I hope that this is not going to be changed in a, in a week. You know, because,
well, Ignite is coming, so you never know. So
that's what I said. I hope it's not going to be changed in a week.
Yeah.
Or 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, true. Yeah. No, I don't think so.
That's the risk. This conference is always a risk.
True. Now, to be fair, if I would be a person responsible of those kind of changes, I would not do them in a conference presentation because it doesn't make any sense. Because conference presentations is getting people excited. Then whatever the practicalities are, that's not necessarily
one of the assumptions is that you can make people excited about the licenses because maybe you offer them more for less. I don't know.
Can we move on to another topic?
Yes.
Yes. So Thomas, you actually talked about the fact that you were a PHP developer, and before we started, that was how we knew about it. And then you talked about the fact that you were a project manager, and I'm actually coming back on that one. And then you said you didn't want to be a project manager anymore because you were getting the heat. So can you talk about that one for the, let's say, the newer audience who are not familiar of the different roles and what's the responsibilities on that as well? So because I think it was a good clarification why you ended up being what you are.
So the point was that I started to be a developer before I started my studies. And then on the third year, I think, or the fourth year, I had classes from project management, and the lecturer was so inspirational that I said, yeah, I want to do that. This is just an awesome job. This is so you know, thankful. I mean, everyone just loves, because you're the project manager, you just really lead the project, lead the team.
And the reality and so, hits you.
and then like right after studies, I tried this project management area. So for 3 years, I was a project manager. I did a couple of SharePoint projects, but then I realized it's, I mean, it depends on the team. The better team, the more independent team you have, then the better the projects are going, and the customer is also more thankful and happy. And then I just switched the company into the other one where the team was not that very much engaged. And I was this middle phase. And I was blamed for everything, obviously, because I was the project manager. And I had no one to then delegate this responsibility, actually. So I even had to like combine two or three roles into myself, like writing documentation, building interfaces, and also project management. So I decided to give up this project management area and, well, just to switch into being a regular consultant.
Yeah.
And later on, just to be on my own, a regular consultant or freelance consultant. And so this is how the story goes. So project management is for someone, for people who are really strong and don't give up very easily on all these negative vibes and comments from the customer sides.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably a good way of putting that. And unfortunately, in IT, if you think about, let's say, IT and let's say in building, house building, for example, projects are completely different. The maturity of the...
It's still a mess.
Okay, there's still a mess.
Well, I would say that all the time that you need to take responsibility for someone else, and those else's are just don't give them.
But I think I'd like to think about it in a way like the same way you would go into a battle. Like if you can breach doors, you can be the first man if you know the team behind you has got your back. While here, as you said, like if you are the guy in the front, but people in the back don't necessarily do their work, well, then you get all the heat. And there's like, so if everything went wrong, well, it's thanks to them because they did all of the work. But if everything is wrong, well, that's on you because people talk to you and then they don't care who is behind you.
Yeah. You didn't manage.
Exactly. Your fault. Like manage it, right?
Yeah.
So I think like it's very much, it's very much depends on the team, whether it's a nice job or a hell to be in.
Right. But, you know, still when you're independent consultant, you do have those messy situations that you need to explain to customer, a lot of not pleasant situations or things, but still, like, this is done by you or the team that you're picking up for your work. So you take the full responsibility because you know those people. And then working for someone else, as you're just being said, be the project manager and, well, here's your team, work with them. And then in the end, it turns out that the team is not really engaged. It's not really professionals. And the one who delegated you to be project manager says, okay, but that's your problem, actually. I gave you everything you needed. You have a team. Why can't you just leave it to project?
Yeah, just talk to each other.
Yeah, exactly. Make it happen. It's your job.
Job is just really unpleasant.
But that's actually interesting. You mentioned that you also then after this, all of this experience, you moved to be an independent. Would you have any tips for those who are looking into moving an independent? What was the trick?
I was about to ask.
Or what was
the top
you've been
three,
successful
top
of
three
that,
things you learn.
Yeah. And we're throwing you a curveball. So
first,
let's see.
It is courage and kind of self-assurance that you can make it. Well, because it always starts with the customer. So I had this, let's say, comfortable situation that I had a customer with whom I was working before I actually switched to this independency mode. And then it just somehow started. So as I grew into this independency and I started to provide my services, I actually never had to advertise myself. It was always the situation that someone heard from someone else, this gossip or the buzz, that there is me who's serving those services. Plus, honestly speaking, it was Nintex as well as area that really made me a competitive service provider to the big companies because, I was cheaper and I got all those competencies as the big companies had.
Yeah.
So there was even Nintex sometimes connecting with the customers.
Cool.
And it is just going on for over 3 years already, so or even more. So that's fine. I don't think of going back to a full time work.
Probably not.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed not to do that.
Yeah. So are you working with the local ones or on then in a global scale on the?
No, actually, I just have one customer from Poland and all the others are from Western Europe.
Cool. Nice.
Yeah.
And there's only 24 hours in a day you can get employed anyway. So, right. So you need to balance out what do you do and which work customers you work on. And if you are, in your case, you have a successful YouTube channel and Twitter account, social media. So you probably have a demand.
Being an MVP evangelist.
Exactly. So you get that visibility. So. Is it hard to decline customers, or how are you evaluating which are the ones you work with, or is it always that everybody is welcome? I don't care.
In the first place, yes, everyone is welcomed. But then this is something about this chemistry that I can feel over the first call. So whenever I feel that I just treat it like a regular vendor, just do it, and no partnership in that. Then this is the first signal, not to do that. And if I'm convinced not to, I then try to, let's say, sell this lead to friendly companies for 10% of revenue. And if not, this is just me putting a very, from the mountain, very high rate so that they just... decline this part.
Or accept, and you're darn.
Yeah, exactly.
All the work.
then you have the money,
so you're
try.
Yeah, exactly. Not too bad. But you said you've been doing this now for 3 years, was it so? Or?
Yeah, that is even over 3 years already.
Yeah. And you've been an MVP for the same amount?
I've became MVP, so I was awarded in November last year. So
okay.
Having my first year.
It's a year.
It will be, yes, a year. And no MVP summit at all.
Yeah.
Unfortunate. But I mean, on the other hand, thinking about your NDA, right? What is the thing that you can share regarding the becoming an MVP? How did it affect your work?
So there is one very, very much valuable benefit of being an MVP, and that is this direct access to Microsoft employees over the Teams team tenant. I mean, the team Microsoft Teams team. And that is the very, very straightforward way for me to ask for help, to consult my doubts, my problems with the technology. So I can always call or talk to the product group, product manager, principal product manager, whomever. And usually I just got the response and help within like hours. Whereas being a regular user, you have forum, you have support, but then, well, it takes more time. And here I just have this direct help. And then as well, the distribution lists that helps us to contact to other MVPs and to get their help and their assistance as well.
Yeah.
So this knowledge behind is the most valuable thing. Oh, okay. And plus the meetings where we can learn about things under NDA before they become live and available. So mainly the knowledge and access to knowledge and
access to people. And obviously, if you think about that from a Microsoft perspective, MEPs are super important for us. So we're trying to help them as much as possible. We cannot answer, unfortunately, from engineering side to every single question, the prod community, mm-hmm. because we have to actually do our job.
RPA, so, you just heard about it, like RPA.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, so it's MVPs have much deeper access on the people for sure. So, and it really depends also on the organization. How's that being built? So very cool. Now, should we do articles already at this point, or do we have a discussion?
Let's do
articles at this point, and let's come back on
a break, and then we can
cool
after a commercial break.
Press review.
Yeah.
Yes. So let's do some quick articles and a quick updates on what's happening in the M365 level. So what's new in the Microsoft Teams? And there's a lot of actually interesting stuff in the Microsoft Teams site. And this is the August update, which came out on the 31st of August. I actually really like this. It's a pity that not every single organization in the Microsoft yet are doing this, is that they summarize the monthly announcements in a single thing, because that helps on tracking them on what's actually happening.
I think so. Maybe what would help is for MVPs and everybody else who appreciates these updates to tell their teams, like, hey, guys, why wouldn't you do that?
True. That is true. That is a fair point. Anyway, so there's that's actually really interesting. There's a spotlight feature coming, so where the meeting organizers presenters will be able to lock their video as the main view of the meeting participants, which is actually really cool, because by default, when you're sharing your screen, you cannot actually do that. Now, to be fair, I think there was a multiple blog post, or at least one blog post, simple blog post this weekend related on if you use OBS, the virtual camera thing, you can do screen sharing and your video at the same time. Which is
whatever you like,
why don't we have that article here in ready? We should actually get that article and mention that, because that was actually pretty clever. And Thomas went directly hunting down the article. Thank you for that. I can see that I'm multitasking. Meeting recording storage areas where stream is not available. Optimize Microsoft Teams experiences available in VMware Horizon 6, 8. Oh. Anyway, devices, new stuff and devices side of the house, and then chat and collaboration, real-time presence, a lot of cool stuff, control in the IT admin. Not a massive amount of items mentioned actually in here. That also is because Ignite is coming. So obviously we'll wait for the large of the announcements in Ignite as well. But the really cool stuff for the Microsoft Teams side. Now this one related on Microsoft Teams, the Microsoft Lists is now in Microsoft Teams as a GA. So that should be now available worldwide. And that's independent of having the Microsoft Lists itself apparently worldwide deployed, unless I'm completely mistaken. There was still some and reports during weekend that people are not necessarily seeing the Microsoft Lists fully out. This is now already fully out. But basically, really cool setup. So Thomas, I'm putting you on spot on this one. So there's the classic debate on SharePoint list versus all of the other data storage options for Power Automate. Can you clarify what's the classic debate on that?
Well, you know, usually SharePoint is taken as a first play, as a first solution for data storage, because that's for free. So when you're trying to build processes that needs to consume data, and then the data is stored in SharePoint and you build process on Power Automate, therefore all those events, actions, and workflows are actually like under the CIDIT license. So you just need to grant user the E3 or Business Premium license to access Office 365, and there you go. Whereas if you want to go into Command Data Service, the enterprise one, not the light one, the one that is supposed to arrive as well, that was called D for Teams. Yeah. So anyway, once we got off the rollout of the CDS Lite, this is going to be bundled as well with Microsoft Teams, then this is going to be then the question which one to choose. And then the answer is going to be mainly around, I think, the governance. So for example, the versioning of data, its storage and permissions and so on. Then when speaking about Microsoft lists, still, honestly speaking, I don't yet know if this is if this can be used as a regular data storage just for processes. But
business processes, yeah.
Yeah. But my answer is that the data source that is being chosen for this debate over SharePoint versus Command Data Service versus a regular command versus regular SQL Server is always a matter of money, of licensing. So SharePoint is available there. It's not a regular relationship database, but it can be used as one, and it's for free and for small processes where you don't need to actually process hundreds or thousands of records, then that's just fine.
Yeah.
And it's free.
Yeah, that's a good way of clarifying that for sure. The conclusion is that it depends, right?
That's usually.
Like always.
It always depends. Yeah, there's multiple aspects. And I think somebody's saying, what is the best practice being X and Y and Z? It's always, there's no such thing as best practice, because even the best practices depend on a customer and the cost factor and what are the areas which are being more important than the other ones. So anyway, good clarification. That's, by the way, an interesting feature as well. So there's discussions related on list items is coming not only on the Teams, but it actually can be done in the SharePoint side as well. So that's pretty cool. And in general, Microsoft Lists is exactly the same technology as SharePoint Lists. So the storage where the stuff is being stored is slightly different, but technology is the same. So sooner or later, you'll see all the matching at one type one, let's say the feature scenarios in both sides. Now, this one was from SharePoint Roadmap Bitstop, the man himself, actually, Lincoln Demaris, who is one of the leads related on Microsoft Lists. And creator of those functionalities is actually interviewed in the SharePoint Roadmap Bitstop. So Introzone was the one which I was looking for. And then a summary again on what has happened on SharePoint side. So the education templates, school staff, all of that coming from the lookbook. That's pretty cool. And Chassidian and caching for the video, so we can actually reduce the network consumption there. Retirement of SharePoint 2010 workflows, to be fair, about time. Yes, we know that it's painful, but it's 2020. We knew that this is going to happen sooner or later. So now it's actually gradually moving forward, which is good.
Now we're waiting for InfoPath.
yeah, that's pretty logical, actually. Yeah, and that's a good point. We haven't been really investing on the InfoPath that much. So yes, somebody is following up on things. And then updating list and list sharing experiences, cross teams, everything is getting more and more, let's say, overlaid between each other because Microsoft Teams and SharePoint and OneDrive are basically owned by the same leadership. So now you can see more and more stuff getting, let's say, mixed and matched, which is understandable. Cool stuff. And that's Yammer. Yeah, Yammer discovery feed, access VCO directly in Microsoft Teams. That's pretty cool as well. And a lot of announcements. And what's your take on the Surface Duo? They've been doing a lot of social media promotions around the Surface Duo. What's your take on it for now? Would you be willing to, well, if you can get it for free, of course, you want to use it, but $1,400?
So I was trying to compare its dimensions to my current phone, and I was shocked because it's not very much thicker and bigger, actually, in all the areas. So that was something that I was really surprised, because I felt that if you just flip a phone and make it like double layer, it should be much, much thicker. And it turns out it's just like 1 or maybe 2 millimeters thicker than my Huawei. So for the price, right, that is right now, I don't think this is something I'm gonna use. It's quite expensive.
Yeah, fair point. But let's see what the future generations will come. And I think one of the values of the Surface thinking has been from day one that we kind of do showcases of what can be done, and then also other manufacturers start using the same model. So I think this at least should be much more reliable and much more safer for the device screen than the Samsung's whatever the
faults.
The faults are. I don't trust that system. I can't help it. But again, who knows? This one, Waldeck, you can actually talk about this one. CLI for Microsoft 365 V3 was announced.
Yay! Correct. New major version. We released new version, which is a CLI for Microsoft 365. We used the V3 basically to introduce new name, rename the products, all variables, basically drop from everywhere in the code base the 0365 reference because it's no longer being used by Microsoft. So yep. We basically felt like we had to align with that to stay on the same page. We also introduced a few improvements, but these improvements are comparably small. Like the biggest thing is basically the name. And basically giving us the chance to clean up some of the work that we have done over the last year, where we would try to align commands across the board, align the options, and basically clear the ground now for a coming year to have a base that we can use to introduce more commands, more features.
Yep. Makes absolute sense. And alignment of, like you said, one of the key points in here was to making sure that marketing is fine with the new name and making sure that we're aligned internally in Microsoft with that one as well.
Correct. So,
really good. Now, this one we announced also last week. So we're extending our Microsoft 365 BMP team on a new members. So the one thing which is not yet visible here is Rabia. Welcome to Microsoft. Rabia is joining Microsoft today, so which is pretty cool. But new group of people who are part of the M365 BMP team, the virtual team running the activities on the open source and side of the house. So pretty cool as well. So Albert and Coin and Bob Ball and Rabia and Yannick. So that's really cool. Now, Vincent had a really cool announcement for Microsoft Graph. So, announcing public preview of Microsoft Graph change notification delivery via Azure Event Hubs. So, that's really cool. Change notifications are super, super powerful. And I think we're not doing a good job of explaining all of the things what they can be used for. One of the things which even I wasn't aware of, and every single time there's a list or library created in SharePoint, you can subscribe to that event. And that's actually really cool. So because then you can modify the list and library based on your business requirements every single time that's getting created. And that's really cool.
So and there are tons of companies who have requirements from, let's say, governance compliance areas, right? That they need to ensure that things are being organized a particular way or permissions are set or there's a specific view. Well, I mean, there might have an option available in UI, but what if the user creates the list differently, or what if there's something else creating the list for them and that might not match these requirements, right? So with this, you can know about it. You can know about it the moment it's available, as opposed to scan the whole tenant, scan every single
scanning stuff, scan everything. Performance intensive as well. So
it's just painfully slow, in other words, right?
Absolutely.
Especially at scale, right? So with this, you can know instantly, hey, there's a new list. It's in this place. This is the list. And then you can work on that directly as opposed to having to find out by yourself every so other hours or days, is there anything new across the whole tenant?
Or a new team or a new file or a whatever you're subscribing to. So really cool stuff. Office scripts now available by default in preview. So that's really cool for the Office web clients or Office clients. We're not supposed to use the web word together with Office anymore. So anyway.
Office on the web? It's no longer on the web?
No, it's just Office.
It's just Office. Okay. You use Office.
So that's official. And this one is also from Thomas. So Thomas, basically, you were doing a live demo on this adaptive card community call. So August 23rd, was it? Anyway, two weeks ago. Something like that. And Adaptive Cards has their own community call. So having it once a month and then updates on what's happening there. What are the new things? Really cool stuff. And there's a recording where Thomas had a demo related on Adaptive Cards in Power Automate. So that's really cool.
Cool.
You want to talk about what was the demo all about?
You know, I just want to talk about maybe just a small say word about the electric cars, because this technology is just growing up more and more significantly into Microsoft communication applications like Teams, Power Virtual Agents, Power Automate. It's also in Outlook, in Cortana, everywhere the SDK is present. And so this is really becoming a thing to know for the developers, especially because you can easily create a content. You don't have to brand it because the branding is done by the host. You just need to create a JSON that displays the data, and so the rest is done. And this saves tons of work, actually, when you try to create a simple messages, simple communicates that are valuable, rich for the end users, attractive, engaging, whatever, name it. And just one small thing with the version 1.3, what the team has delivered is also a very significant change because they implemented, finally, fields validation. So once you create a form using Adaptive Card, you're finally able to validate the inputs. You can do regex validation. You can say, hey, you can't post it because you need to put required value in here, or this value there is not matching the pattern. So that's, again, this milestone that they've just taken.
And that's only a start. So Matt is Hindekrane. We've been having many joint sessions in Ignite in the past as well, and he's leading the effort on the adaptive cards. And there's so many things in the pipeline. So really, really cool stuff. Getting better and better.
The one thing I wanted to ask, like, so is V1.3 available everywhere across the board? Meaning Teams desktop, Teams web, Teams phone, Teams mobile?
Yeah.
No, it's just available for you as a developer once you get the SDK. So you can use SDK version 1.3. But then in Teams, it's version 1.2, not fully supported. In Outlook, it's 1.0. In bot framework the bot framework is following the in a very tightest way what's coming up with the new things. But the other partners within Microsoft are just way behind the latest release and latest updates, unfortunately.
So with that not being available, where would you use it then?
So I can't use them yet as a user. No, I mean, you know, I can ask a developer friend who can create a demo for me, but what I can do is just to wait until it is, for example, rolled out to Teams. So Teams is 1.2, and hopefully this will be 1.3 as fast as possible.
But that's kind of understandable because of the logistics of the software. The software has to support a certain version, and then they need to upgrade that to support the latest version before. Allocation. Now, this one was from a Power Automate site, a blog post, really cool from last week as well, got a lot of attention actually as well. So run a flow when a SharePoint column is modified. So you actually automate based on column changes. And it's a really, really widely requested feature in user voice as well. And Jax was really happy to actually close that one out. So that was visible. Classic requests, and actually Jack showed about that one in the August monthly community call. He actually showed live demos on what was coming up, so really cool as well. Now, Thomas, this is your YouTube channel. Do you want to do a quick intro?
Right, so first, subscribe.
Yes.
I'm trying to get subscribe as first. Subscribers as possible.
I'm not signed in, so I can't.
Anyway, you can do it later. So I'm recording videos around all those posts that I'm writing as well about. So in post, I describe very deeply how the solution was done step by step with code samples and expressions and things. And then the video is about to show how it works and just briefly go over the technology that was used to create the working solution or to explain some steps that can be easier. I mean, that it's easier to show than to write about. And I'm basically recording videos all around the Power Platform. So let it be Power Automate, Adaptive Cards, as well as a part of those, Microsoft Teams, again, as a platform for processes, then Power Apps, Power Virtual Agents, RPA, so like anything around. Plus, there are also recordings from sessions that I've been delivering online and some other community calls that where I was featured. So anything that happens around my video digital life is there.
Yeah, pretty cool.
It's really lots cool of valuable content.
Yeah, Really cool stuff, absolutely. Now, related on this one, this is your blog, Adaptive Cards in Outlook, and this is basically then a blog post related on the video related on the blog post, what you were just saying, right?
Right. So, like, that's the one of the latest posts that I've just written, and it, as said, deeply describes how was this whole solution created, what are the prerequisites, step by step, how to accomplish what I'm showing in the video above.
Yeah.
Cool.
Really cool.
This
and
cool.
Really detailed work, absolutely. So people can actually follow up on the steps and get to the same level. And this is really cool. Detailed blog posts are always nice. So it's not just that, hey, this is possible, but rather teaching the other people what's actually possible. Super valuable, absolutely, for the community.
The point is that I'm always trying to write the content, to deliver the content the way I'd expect others to deliver. Because you can always find posts that nearly perfectly matches the question that you have. But then as you attempt to read them, you find yourself in a situation that for the author, it was obvious to just skip those five steps. Whereas those five steps were exactly what you were looking for.
Yes.
And then you're still in the same place where you used to be in the first place.
Yeah, it's not always put yourself on the mind of the reader and don't assume that they know everything what you know. So it's better to clarify the situation in a detailed enough level. Now, we also have two videos from our Italian friend, Waldeck. Waldeck.
See?
Well, he looks almost the same. See? See?
No. See?
Paolo.
No. Paolo, so taxonomy APIs for Microsoft Graph, this is already from week before, but it's actually quite a significant release. It was one of the number one user voice entries which we had on the OneDrive SharePoint side, and it's now in preview, so really cool stuff. So you can actually get access on the terms data using the Microsoft Graph. And the newer one, which Paolo did actually last week, is around the to-do APIs available in Microsoft Graph and how do they actually work and what's available. So really cool videos. And again, a short video explaining how things work and how to get started on posting and creating stuff using the Graph. So really cool stuff. Absolutely. It's great to see the level of advancements, what we do with Microsoft Graph. So every single week, almost, there's new stuff, new APIs, which is really good.
Yeah.
Serve and debug team, Microsoft Teams SPFX app from localhost. Good blog post from
Marcin
walking through on how would you actually do the debugging in the Microsoft Teams site. I can guess that that's a
Polish.
Polish name, absolutely. Yeah. Clearly it is.
everything that ends with the ski or ski is Polish, and not only that, so there's originally, what's the word for that?
Latin. I would say it's Latin.
No. So that, these are it's the...
Maybe.
No, what I'm looking, what I'm at is the... I forgot the word. That is really helpful. So you have the
we can post the recording, and then you can do the research, and then...
you can grab a drink, right? So it's the royal... kind of line.
Oh, yeah.
People. Yeah. Because it's Schlachter. Schlachter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know what you're saying.
It's not the king and the queen only, but it's just the nobleman. There you go.
Nobleman. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. The noble. So it's the noble line of heritage.
Yeah. Makes sense. Now, in the recording, there was quite a few nice blog posts as well. So Lorian Strand had a new Microsoft 365 Groove governance content, so kind of a summary on what's available and the videos which are available in this area. So really cool stuff as well. So coming from Matt Wade, yes, and this is precisely what I was trying to actually get to open pretty soon. I will put that one on the line. Now, Vartman had a good blog post on the Microsoft Teams messaging extension using SPFX, getting the message data with Microsoft Graph. So basically, how to use SPFX and Graph together with Microsoft Teams. So even if you're doing extensibility for Microsoft Teams, the SharePoint framework is the one targeted for that as well. And we're getting a lot of investments on that area in the future as well. So good story from Bartman on that one. Bartman works in the Valo intranet, and I know that they implemented actual work on this site for their products. So really cool stuff from him. Use SPFX for task modules in Microsoft in Teams messaging extension and access Microsoft Graph. So basically exactly the same story from Marcus Miller and how did it actually work and how do you set it up and how do you run the things and how do you do the extension. So really cool stuff. Great blog post to follow up on and learning how to do this level of an extensibility. Actual code, not just low code. But if you can achieve something with other code, anyway. This one is good. Live London Underground Line Status, SharePoint View Formatting and Power Automate. So basically low-code stuff. So basically tube status, so from a London, which is getting automated by using Power Automate. But then the formatting is actually making sure that it's actually providing additional insights. So JSON level definitions for the list for the formatting. So really cool stuff. And walking through the how to do that, how to create a site. This really starts from a one step at a time level and how to do the automation and then eventually having the list and then modify the list to actually be based on the status of the individual line. So really cool stuff. Definitely useful for those companies who are working in the London. So not necessarily for those who are, so, who are not. So, but from a technology perspective, that's good. I have no idea what I'm saying. I need to get
You can adapt it to your bus lines, your traffic jams, your helicopter lines, whatever you fancy.
Yeah, we do helicopter lines, absolutely. Yeah. From kitchen, from the bedroom to kitchen, and then to the
office. It's all about helicopter view, right?
Exactly. So... And this is from Megan Strunt, Microsoft Teams meeting, leaving a strong impression. And these are really good because obviously it's not just about technology. It's about making sure that that people know how to use the tools and efficient way out-of-the-box capabilities. And this is more around the human behavior. So basically, how do you book the meeting? How do you give them that sufficient amount of details about the meeting and understand how you can mute, unmute, do the videos and all of that stuff. So really walking through the basics. And it's really, really important that we explain the basics because most of the people are looking into these basics, right? Rather than the deep dive, technical 400 level, whatever. There's like niche level information. So really cool stuff as well. This one from Thomas, you probably want to explain what was this all about and the power of the community again.
Right. So the reason I featured this post here is that we plan to create, to do a hackathon, Hack for Good, in September. But well, in the end, our plans were again somehow disturbed by the COVID situation. So we didn't gather the amount of participants to create the number of teams we wanted. Yep. So in the end, we decided to postpone the event until next year, May, possibly. But there was one submission. I mean, the hackathon was dedicated, was focused on NGOs, so the non-governmental organizations. And one of the submissions were from the Caritas Poland. And they just have a very small IT team that actually is built from just one person. And he had a very clear requirements, what he wants to build, what are the most common issues they have and how he would like to address them. But he was not able to do it himself. So we decided to spend weekend on call together within the team of organizers of the hackathon and simply build together the solutions that the the Caritas needed. And after the weekend, we've created one Power App application, two Power Automates, a couple of other functionalities. And as far as we know, they're using this ever since, which is already over a month. So that's really cool. And there is just a thank you letter at the bottom. So
cool. That is really cool.
This is really good.
This is the power of the community.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Making a real difference in the nonprofit organizations. And I know that there's a lot of people who would love to help these kind of organizations even more, except like I said, the COVID situation isn't making this easy, unfortunately. So I think there was the CRM guy had a similar kind of setup in UK, and they that was a big success like a month ago or so, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. But they had just a bigger reach and a bigger response, I think. Ours was just very small, unfortunately. Yeah. I mean, I bet that if we had this in person where we had pizza and beer in the end, the response would be much bigger.
Yep.
But unfortunately, well, we were not able to do this.
2020 is hard on the on this
on everything on everything
exactly. And the one thing, the last thing, what I wanted to actually show from here is that wherever the block here we go, Matt, and there we go. Now this is the one which I was actually almost missing. So professional presenting teams with no additional skills and software, but how to present your video and content side by side in a Microsoft Teams meeting. That was actually pretty cool from Matt. So kind of a basic setup explaining how to use OBS and then how we can actually stream side by side on the Teams, because you can actually do that. But with OBS, you basically do an artificial or virtual camera, and then in the virtual camera, you can actually overlay whatever you want from a presentation perspective. And that's actually really cool. So it's a great idea for Matt on explaining how this can be done. So really cool.
Really cool.
Cool. Let me actually stop the sharing and let's do a few more minutes. We spent quite a lot of time actually on the articles, but that's fine. So it's good to get some visibility for Thomas's YouTube videos, and there's a lot of videos already. You had like 60 or something, 50 videos already available here.
Well, I think it's more. It's over 30.
Yeah.
Or at least it used to be.
I'm estimating quickly 6 times 5, 34. 30. So if you go to the YouTube studio, it doesn't tell you the overall number anymore, and that's annoying.
Yeah, so I'm using the TubeBuddy, and it says it's 34. However, there are some private videos just shareable over the link, so it doesn't count. Around 30.
How often are you doing new videos?
Once a week? Tight schedule. Yep. It's like whenever I feel whenever I feel that I have a content to write about, to share, then I'm recording a video. But it usually takes me around a day to record a video and then author it, produce it, because I'm just trying to make it as perfect as possible.
Yeah.
So like I start 10 times the beginning over and over and over and over again. I always try to record it as a single shot, so not to just paste it from parts, but just to make it more real and true. So
you have like the first part perfect, and then towards the end it's like, oh damn it, now I need to do it again.
Well, I had like once I was recording a video, I recorded an hour of video, and then I realized once I started to author it that actually mic was not working. So
yes,
and the lip sync was not possible actually.
I think we had the same thing on this show. Like we were recording 15 minute discussion. It's like, are we recording this? No, we're not.
Nope.
Good job.
So, we forgot about putting the recording on. That's pretty awkward.
So, things happen. It's just a technology.
Yeah,
that's true. That is true. To be fair, for example, the recording in Teams, and I hope that we're heading there, but I've seen this so many times personally as well, that you're setting up a meeting and you're saying, for those who cannot make it, we'll record the meeting. And then you forget about recording, or then halfway through the meeting, you're like, oh my God, I promised to record this. So since storage is basically free nowadays, why wouldn't we record every single video of every single meeting and only take a snapshot away from it, just in case?
Compliance.
Is it compliance?
Okay. I think there might be a chance that it's incomes. But on the other hand, like when you create a new meeting in Outlook, you can tick the box, do it in
that
Teams.
Would be, exactly.
Next box, record it.
Yes. Yes,
already in there, like plan the recording.
Yeah.
Maybe there is a way to use Power Automate to automatically trigger recording in an existing meeting.
That's interesting.
Once you type in the email
RPA.
No, RPA is not a thing. It has to be at the graph. No. RPA is too. I mean, it can bring you down. It's not working perfectly, you know. And then Graph API. Once you do it over the APIs, it's more reliable. So yeah. If there is an endpoint to trigger recording in existing meeting, then I would say, yes, that's doable over the Power Automate.
www.uservoice.com.
Yeah, there we go. That is. But I would love to have that, because then that would actually mean that we will never forget about recordings. So, and that would be really cool.
So, but I guess so for the same way, you can turn lobby off for a meeting, right? Why yeah. wouldn't you be able to do this? Like, this is a recurring call that we want to record.
Yeah, just to check. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it should be. And now that we are having pretty soon the meeting extensibility and all of that, that seems like a no-brainer to support automatic recording as well. Yeah. So, or have an API there available, because there will be the meeting extensibility in Teams and all of that stuff. So
you really heard cool it here first.
It wasn't here first. It was announced in Inspire. So
recording of meetings. I mean, recording of meetings.
No. Recording. Okay, that's a yeah. That's
here,
a highly
speculative
thing. Yes, exactly.
It's useful for two of us.
Cool. I need to start heading the I have a doctorate meeting with our doc, unfortunately, so everything should be fine, but I have to go there pretty fast. So I think we should be wrapping up. So what's coming up with this week? Anything interesting you're working on? Waldeck, let's start with you. Providing an example.
Yes. So last week we released the CLI v3. This week we're working on version 3.1. Basically as simple as that. So we have more PRs to go through. We have some more ideas, so we'll be doing some work on that. Other than that, let me think. I'm doing research into some more M365 APIs for reporting. So something might come out of that or not, depending on the outcome. But that's about it. So much.
I'm about to start get involved into Lotus migration into SharePoint, which is going to be quite a new thing to me.
On-prem to online?
As well, sorry?
On-prem to online.
Yeah, on-prem to online and Lotus to SharePoint lists and things. And on the other hand, there's also a migration from SharePoint 2010 to SharePoint Online where I need to write down, let's say, the steps, the approach, the plan.
So, project manager. There you go.
There we go. Back in
I would say this is an architect.
Okay,
there
we go.
Position.
On my side, we're taking actually a long weekend off, which is good. Just had summer vacations and now long weekend. No, just kidding. So the US people are having this Monday actually off. But I'm taking from Thursday forward a long weekend off. So, but super busy 3 days, making sure that the Ignite videos are getting recorded and finalized, the demos, monthly summary. We have a monthly community call coming up on Tuesday, all of that stuff. So a lot of stuff and happening. And there's going to be a lot of social media. The BMP virtual conference videos are coming out tomorrow as well, Tuesday, which is, depending on when you're watching the video or listening this one, it's today.
They're available on YouTube.
Yes, exactly. Which is, by the way, a really cool setup as well. So BMP team did a virtual conference, a 18 session, all completely free. And we had 2,200 registered attendees and 5,000, joining events. So pretty cool setup in the Microsoft Teams Live events. So, and everything recorded, YouTube videos will be out, absolutely. So free material for everybody. I think that's always good. So
I mean, that's the best thing about COVID, that you have all these conferences for free. Build, Inspire, Ignite, everything's for free.
Absolutely. And you can get it. There's like too many videos to watch right now. That's the challenge. But I think that's it for this one. So thank you, Thomas. Thank you for joining us. Good discussion related on your history and also the Power Automate side of the house and all of that and the community work. Really cool stuff. And the Hackathon for Good, really, really great stuff. Hopefully you can make that happen again in April in face-to-face. So hopefully the situation is better at that time. And thank you, Waldeck, for joining as well. But we'll be back with
Thank you, Essa, for hosting.
Thank you. But we'll be back with the new BMP Weekly within a week. So thank you, everybody. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.